This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's Tuesday, March 12th, 2019. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host. We're here on a special show. There's a phenomenon sweeping Brooklyn, and it's a German Pilsner from the Black Forest region called Rathaus Pils. And we got some great guests today. Before I introduce them, I just want to give my backstory is that out here at Roberta's Pizza in Brooklyn, where we record Heritage Radio Network shows, the last few years, every time a brewer comes in or a real beer personality for our show, their choice has been Rathaus Pils when they're coming into Roberta's, and it was always amazing to me. So we're going to talk about that backstory. We actually have, we'll go through the room and introduce, we have the guy who's behind importing it to the States, and our good buddy Aaron Goldfarb, who wrote a recent article about it for Punch Drinks. Let's go around the room. Everybody introduce themselves.
I'm Joshua Van Horn from Gold Star Beer Counter.
And Josh, what's interesting is that it's taken off in your place, right? The Rathaus Pils.
Yeah.
Like a craft beer temple, one of the best good beer steel bars.
Yeah, it's been really great. I mean, so we've carried Rathaus since we pretty much opened our doors in 2015. And it's always had just we've had it on consistently, like a number of times a month since we opened. And it's just, I mean, the response to it whenever we tap it has not changed since the moment we started. So it's just been people finding out about the beer,
and I know people love it. I know we can geek out about it for hours, but I want to Aaron, just a little backstory. Aaron Goldfarb, you're a writer, aren't you?
I sure am.
You got any books out there?
Oh, I got a new book called Hacking Whiskey. It is not about Rathaus Pils, but you should buy it anyways.
So last time, we've had you on the show before, but this was a very interesting article. Tell us about how you wrote it, what was behind this article about the cult of Rathaus Pils.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who lives and drinks in Brooklyn, Rathaus Pils kind of just didn't exist, and then it was everywhere, and it's hard to even, for most of us, we were talking off air, to remember a time it wasn't here, but that time was just 5 years ago. And it kind of became a signifier of this is a good place, you know, whether you're at, you know, a top pizza place in Brooklyn like Roberta's or Gristmill in my neighborhood, or a top beer bar like Gold Star, Sputtendivel. If it was on the menu, you went, okay, these guys know what they're talking about, which is kind of weird. And there's really no other European Pilsner where that works.
That's great. And Kim?
Hi. Sorry, just drinking some Rathaus. I'm from Brewery Lane. Kim Ricardo over here.
And it's been a big thing for you guys,
yeah,
too,
for
right?
Sure. The first time I had it, I remember I opened up Torst in 2013. And I remember one of my coworkers, Finelli, brought back a bottle and we showed Mike, the beer buyer then, Mike Amity, which was
sure,
a beer buyer
know,
for Torst.
Yeah.
Hi, Mike, if you're listening. He probably is. So Frenelli brought the bottle and he tried it and he was just so shocked by it, but we couldn't bring it in until Tobias here brought it in. That was awesome. And then Tor started carrying and pouring, and that, like, the Rathaus was our number one chugger when it would be a busy day. And then slowly you'd see it in different bars and more craft beer bars throughout like 2014, 15. So it's pretty great to see.
That's
it.
That's great.
Where it
and
is
the
now.
Guy behind it. So Tobias, introduce yourself. You're really the story is because of you. So you're Tobias, what's your full name and everything?
Well, I'm Tobias Holler. I grew up in the Black Forest, and I met my wife, Ayana, who's also from the Black Forest, in Brooklyn. And so we grew up in neighboring villages, but we actually met only in Brooklyn. And so when we had this idea to open a restaurant that celebrates our home region, the Black Forest, we decided to call it Black Forest Brooklyn. We wrote a business plan, and on page one of the business plan, it said that we will have Roadhouse. We called Roadhouse at the time. This was years before we actually opened, and said, hey, we have this idea. We want to bring Roadhouse in. And they said, that's too much red tape. We're not really interested in expanding to the United States, but thanks for your interest. So we said, okay. We opened the restaurant anyways. And in 2013, it got a lot of press in the region. So all the regional newspapers were very excited about the Black Forest being represented in New York City. And so Roadhouse also got wind of this. And it was actually the funny thing, the kind of tipping point for them was actually a radio show, believe it or not, that where there was this radio guy who realized that we have a Black Forest restaurant in Brooklyn and we don't have Roadhouse, which is kind of a laugh. So he started calling breweries in the Black Forest to say, hey, have you heard about Black Forest Brooklyn? They need a Black Forest beer. And so all of them said, oh, yeah, well, we can't redo it. And they called Roadhouse. And then Roadhouse, surprisingly, said, okay, all right, we hear you. We're gonna make this work.
And then you brought us a Roadhouse Pils on draft. I've only had it in bottles. I know Brewery Lane has it in bottle. Roberta's always has it in bottle.
I mean, the bottle is really super iconic. And back home, this is what we would drink, bottles. And it was, you know, Black Forest Brooklyn doesn't do bottles. We only have draft beer. So we brought in this draft beer, and we actually don't sell the bottles, which is I'm kind of upset about, but it just obviously doesn't make sense to have draft beer, Roadhouse, and bottles at the same time. So I'm always happy to come to a place where there's bottles.
That's great. Well, the big question is, why is this so popular? I mean, there's a lot of pills. There's a lot of German pills. You know, our friends, whether it's Beer Street or, you know, Gold Star or Brewery Lane, you guys have access to all the best craft beer in the world. Why is Roadhouse Pils so popular? I mean, it's good beer, but anyone, let's get everybody's take on that. Aaron?
Well, so I actually started drinking today with a local Pilsner, and the Roadhouse was better indeed. As Tobias explained to me, it's the only German Pilsner that comes here unfiltered and shipped cold. So I think, unlike a lot of the other ones, we're drinking it very fresh. A lot of European beer comes to us skunked and old, so I think that's an advantage. I think the logo is key. It's a great looking bottle. It's fun to Instagram, as I Instagrammed an hour ago at Aaron Goldfarb. But it does taste amazing. Wait,
what's the name of your book, Aaron?
Hacking Whiskey. It's a great beer. It's a great beer. I don't know if it's the world's best Pilsner. You know, I'd put Tank Pilsner or Kell up there, but it's damn good, and it's probably the best European Pilsner we get in America.
You guys, Kim? Why do people like it?
It's just damn crushable. I could chug it when I'm, you know, like, that was the first beer like that I usually go for after a long shift at work. Want to drink something really fast. I'm not really into the hazy IPAs per se, the trend that's going on right now. I'm more into lagers. So I always went towards the Pilsners, and yeah, Roadhouse.
Are there
any
other lagers that are crushable that you would recommend that you guys move, or is this moving more than
any Suarez, you know, like obviously I'm repping them always.
Suarez family.
Oxbow is a big mover for us. I'm good friends with them. So I always try to carry their Luplo on draft or cans. Right now we have cans of it right now at the store. Trying to think, we always have Schlenkela, the Helles, and the Fest beer that just came out in cans. B-United is doing a great job canning those. And
do you have Threes Vliet?
Threes Vliet, yeah. We have the Innerborough, Bushburg, some Transmitter. They're making some killer Pilsners as well.
And what about for you, Josh? You really got into it. I mean, you made some Roadhouse candles.
Yeah, we did. I think also the Roadhouse, you have to think, like, only came in, we could only get it a couple years ago. I mean, which is, you know, it's just exciting that something is new and it seems kind of exclusive even to the East Coast, or, you know, it seems like when you're on the beginning of being able to try something and you find something that's good that isn't widely known about yet, it's just exciting. It's exciting for people to share that with other people and their friends and say, hey, I found this great Pilsner that maybe you probably haven't had before. So
yeah, and we look to guys like you, Brewery Lane and Gold Star Beer Counter, for arbiters of taste. You know, so what is this? Tobias.
Tobias, yes.
Let's tell it more. So you actually, are you surprised that it's become so popular in the States? And tell us the backstory of you growing up in the Black Forest. Why this brand means so much to you?
Well, I mean, it's so funny for me to see the success in New York or in Brooklyn, because, and I'm happy about it. Of course, I'm very proud. This is our home. It's like our hometown beer, sort of. I mean, it's a region, but it's a region made of small villages, so we kind of all feel we're part of this region. And it's known for, like, you know, quality, craft. You know, they make cuckoo clocks and all that good stuff. And so that's, they make their beer the way that you know, we make cuckoo clocks, like with a lot of passion, a lot of time, a lot of craft, and I think it shows. But for me growing up, you know, you can start drinking beer when you're 16 in Germany. So as a teenager, this is the beer that this is your go-to beer. It's not particularly fancy. It's not particularly expensive. It's the beer that you can get at the gas station, you know, in the middle of the night if you want to have another six pack. So it was like the beer. So it wasn't anything fancy. So then kind of fast forwarding, now we're sitting here and we're talking about this beer. It just makes me really happy because it is a great beer. And, you know, it's nice that this kind of old school strategy gets rewarded. They take a lot of time to make their beer, which is expensive, right? I mean, it sits in the tanks forever. So it's really nice to see that success for me.
That's great, man. Thanks for putting the work in. Aaron?
It must be surreal to him. I mean, but the thing is, he's calling this a gas station beer there. I mean, imagine the fortune. Our gas station beers are, they look like they're from the 60s.
Depends where you go, man.
Depends where they go.
If I go to near Gold Star Beer Counter.
Well, I mean, Josh doesn't pump gas at his bar, but...
you can walk up to the window, though.
Yeah, you can, right?
Yeah.
And Brewery Lane's kind of a little, almost like a grocery store setup, so...
I think another point about the beer is it's still so small, it's never mishandled. You're not going to go into a crappy bodega and there's dusty bottles of it. Every place you have it, you're going to have it within, I presume, weeks, if not maybe a month from when it left the brewery. So you're never going to have a bad example of it and get turned off to it the way you might get turned off to Pilsner or Kel in America. And then, you know, finally have it again in Prague and go like, oh shit, this is actually really good. So you're never going to have a bad scarcity
thing.
Yeah, you're never going to have a bad version of it. I presume maybe they'll get successful enough in Brooklyn, or maybe not. Tobias can tell us better, that they'll start pumping it out to, you know, the Barclays Center and whatnot. We can only dream. But for now, it's only at good places, only handled well, and only fresh.
Let's talk about why you wrote the article. I think it was a couple months ago, one of our guests, I think Pete Langle from KCBC was on, or it was Jesse from Innerborough.
Yeah.
He said, oh, I just got a call from Aaron. He was asking me about Rothouse Pils. What's the process of doing a story like that? Because you ended up, you know, you brought in a bunch of industry people, Kim and Josh and Tobias.
Yeah, I mean, so you come up with a story idea as a freelancer. You sell it to your editor, and then you go, oh, shit, I got 10 days to talk to everyone. So you go, like, where did this start?
So who else did you talk to? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know, Josh and I had geeked out over it before, so he was an easy interview. He told me that he thought Black Forest was who had started it, so I sent the info at Black... I sent,
no problem.
To, you know, the info at blackforest.com, which you never know if anyone will ever answer, and luckily he did. And I think we talked on the phone about an hour later, and that was good. Now I was in pretty good shape. And then you just start, you know, kind of hearing, hey, do you know who first started serving this? Do you know why it's so big? And you always screw up a little and don't talk to someone you should have. But, yeah, I mean, it wasn't that hard. You go to a bar that serves it, you go, okay, these people obviously care about it. Because it's not something that I think is being pushed super hard. I would presume places that serve it have tried to serve it.
No, that's great. And Josh?
Yeah.
So the process of writing the story, you know, you've been interested in it for a while. It's a phenomenon, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know what's really interesting about it? I don't see this with very many beers, but we have like customers who know the batch the date of the batch that's coming out, and they're like, oh, but this, you know, like they'll see this week's date on it and they'll compare it to last week's date and they keep track of it. It's pretty, yeah, and they can have that idea in their mind as like something that's flowing, and they'll know which one tasted the best. It's pretty amazing.
That's pretty good.
Tobias, you seem to know a lot about this, the importing of it, and you seem to work closely with, it's a state-owned brewery?
Yeah, well, we're actually, just for the record, we're actually not the importer. We're just a restaurant who really, really, really wants it. and then other people brought it in. So St. Kilian is the importer. They also bring in, you know, Kösterzer and Aventinos and other German beers. So we're just a restaurant that buys it from Union. But we obviously connected directly with the brewery and we try to push them. And so it did come in. Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, it actually is, it's not an unfiltered beer. It's an unpasteurized beer. And it's the only unpasteurized German beer that's available here. And it's, I mean, they told me the crazy stories that, you know, the FDA or the customs, they consider this beer a biological weapon. I mean, it's classified as a biological weapon because of the bacteria that are not, you know, cooked. And so they have to jump through all sorts of hoops in customs to actually get it in. And it has to come over and refrigerated containers. Is that
where the Germans are too clean?
Yeah, definitely. If you look at the brewery, that is a clean brewery. I mean, you can eat off the floor. It's amazing.
And that's my thought, was that German, everything about Germany is so clean and efficient. You wouldn't worry about it being
bacteria.
Contaminating.
Yeah, no, they have pretty strict rules, and the importers, they were like, they got some serious headaches. I don't know the details, but it is considered a biological weapon. That's the punchline.
It's coming, like what Josh was saying, it's coming fresh, it's coming regularly.
Yeah, it's coming over in refrigerated containers, and it's only available on the East Coast because it's not really, there's no point in pushing it further west. I mean, that's what they told me. I don't know if they're changed that, but as far as I know, it's only available on the East Coast.
Yeah. But I think Tobias told me you're tapping kegs that were brewed 10 days previous, 2 weeks previous, pretty fresh.
Yeah, no, definitely. And even if you look at the expiration, every bottle has an expiration date, and this is November. Actually, you know what? This is actually the German way. This is 11/04, but it's not November 4th. It's actually April 11th.
Okay.
Because we put the day first and then the month. Great. So this is only good for another month, right? Okay. So I think they have a 6-month expiration date. So from the time they make it, 6 months, and then it's no good anymore.
It's pretty amazing. And luckily, our producer's here, Justin Kennedy.
Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
It's your birthday, so happy birthday, Justin.
It's not today. Yesterday was.
Well, we told everyone it was today, right, Matt?
Yeah.
28.
28 years old, yeah.
Where's the cheers, guys? Come on.
Cheers.
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 Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
Happy birthday.
One thing I wanted...
you go. Thank you, Matt.
One thing I wanted to...
We're a highly produced show, and we really work on those details,
right,
guys.
Thanks, Matt. One thing I wanted to say that Aaron didn't mention, but the reason he had called Jesse Ferguson from Innerborough is that other half in Innerborough actually did it was a Helles beer that they did together, a collaboration beer, and the name of it was like Interhalf or something like that. Yeah. But the label was a direct ripoff of the Rodhouse label. So
they call it an homage.
An homage, okay.
It's worth a Google image search.
It was a funny
label.
It's
two bearded Brooklyn guys that look like the lady in her dirndl.
But you got to go to our... Definitely
fun.
Go to look at @beer_sessions Instagram, because there's a nice photo by the beer trekker of the label if you don't know it. And quickly, what's this beer? The second beer is in a nice Gold Star Crowler.
Oh, this is Palatine. Oh, this is Suarez Palatine Pilsner from our friends up in Livingston. I actually brought three Suarez beers with me today, and we're not supposed to crawler them, but I did it special for this occasion.
Ooh, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. Jimmy.
those are the, you know, if you have Suarez or Rothouse available, that would be the Pilsner face-off, I think, in Brooklyn.
Well, that's going to be awesome. So we're getting a great, great show going here. We're talking about Pilsners. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network.
We're also super awesome.
Thank you, Heritage.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We weren't gone for that long, but we're talking about Rothouse Pils. We're drinking a lot. And Josh from Gold Star also brought in a Suarez Family Brewery Palatinite Pils.
Palatine Pilsner from Suarez Family Brewery.
So, Aaron, you're saying these are the two your top pils. You've got Rothouse Pils and Suarez.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a Pilsner fan, you want to drink stuff that's local and fresh. And you know, Suarez, along with maybe Threes and Folksbeer, would be the kings of that where we live. And Rothouse is the only one that can compete because we get it so quickly and so fresh. Where I would never drink another European Pilsner in Brooklyn.
Let's talk about styles. Let's mix this up a little bit. You know, the German style of pils is something that we all know about. Some of us know the history. But then in the late 1800s, Carlsberg up in Scandinavia figured out yeast for lager. And that changed the whole world. And now we've got New World pils. Like even the Suarez is a little hoppier than the German. Does anyone want to talk about the differences in styles between pils and lagers and where they're from? Because this German, or we can talk about why you like this German pils so much, Tobias, because, you know, it definitely tastes, it's breadier, it you know. What do you look for if you didn't have Rothouse Pils, what would you actually be serving? I know Josh wants to talk about styles too.
I'm German, and I basically, like, we're not known for being the most creative when it comes to making beer. We're just trying to do two or three styles and try to do them well since, you know, 500 years. So even when I grew up, I didn't know anything else. I just knew Pilsner and that was it. And when I came to the US and I was going to the Brooklyn Brewery, and this was in early 2000s, and I was like, this is so strange. Like, this tastes so strange. This hop, this kind of, what kind of hop is that? And then, I mean, now I love it. Now I love a good IPA. But you know, it's, and we get lots of German visitors, and they, you know, when they drink, we do have IPAs as well, but they don't like it.
It's not beer to them.
No.
Kim, what about you? Because you've been in a lot of retail places. You must have a sense of, you know, American pils versus German pils, lagers.
Yeah. Also, I almost forgot to mention about the Tipo pils too. Before, when we were talking about different kind of pilsners, that's another favorite of mine that comes from Be United and
from
also
Italy, right?
Yeah. Italian pilsner, also really good. Another brewery that makes similar to Tipo pils is Lupolo from Oxbow. Another Italian style pilsner, which they put on that festival Pils and Love in the summer, which is coming back this year again. July 20th, which is just strictly pilsners, nothing else. No,
I'm going
style
to that.
Yeah, yeah, no, it sounds amazing.
Who wants to go to
it's
that?
It's probably the best festival
Justin
ever.
Justin's going.
I went to the one last year in Los Angeles. It was awesome that Firestone Walker hosted.
July 20th this year.
He wasn't paid. All right. Portland, Maine. Is that
yeah.
And Portland, Josh,
Maine.
What about for you for styles?
Say it again, Jimmy.
Well, there's German pils. There's certain styles that the palate. These guys are accustomed to a certain style. We're having, you brought the Suarez, it's a little hoppier.
Definitely.
You want to weigh in on any of that?
Any sauce up? I mean, so a couple years ago, finding like a good expression of a Pilsner was not necessarily easy of a European style. I think we're kind of like coming into terms with that here in the United States, but it's been a slow go. And a super interesting one with people like Suarez Family who are actually devoting a lot of time and effort to it. So, but it's been a super exciting time for sure. I mean, we always have our IPAs down packed, you know, and we've ever like sweet stouts down packed. But this is a new thing for us lagers.
You know, Justin, I think we haven't really done too many pils shows. A few years ago, we did one with Eric Asimov from the New York Times, talking about why there weren't local pilsners in baseball stadiums. But it's true that making a good pilsner, it does take a little more effort, doesn't it?
I think it's a lot harder than making you know, the current hazy IPA or whatever. There's, you know, I think one thing that a lot of people say is there's not a whole lot to hide behind, and I think that's completely true. There's, if you have a flawed pilsner, you pretty much anyone can taste it. I had one from Lagunitas last night.
Oh, no.
That was I should have known better. I bought it at my bodega, and it was obviously very skunky. It was old. They don't date code, so I don't know how old it was, but there was dust on the bottle. I shouldn't have bought it, but I did. And it had a
not
distinct
an invite to their next
podcast. But yeah, there's, I think Victory with their Prima Pills has always been one of my favorite local
Agreed.
Ones.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Tipo Pills, Pivo Pills from Firestone Walker is a classic. But I was curious, and I don't know if Tobias or Aaron know about the history of this brewery. It's not like one of the ancient German breweries. It's, I think, from, what, 1950s or so? Do you guys know about like what
I mean, he probably knows better than me. The beer, I think, is 1950. The brewery is, I think, 1781. It's not It's not Weihstephan by any means, but, you know, compared to even Brooklyn Brewery, it's pretty old.
No, and that's a good question. I want actually, Tobias, tell us more about the culture of you know, the Black Forest, the Schwarzwald, the Kirschtorte. Does anyone know what that means? It's the Black Forest cherry cake, which if you take high school German, you learn that. But
listen, you guys, I mean, you have to come to our restaurant to have not only Rothaus on draft, but also the Schwarzwälder Kirschtorte, the Black Forest cake. And Ayana, my wife, she used to make it as a kid, and we're using her recipe. So it's the real deal. It's complete with, you know, bottom layers of chocolate cake. It's soaked with cherry brandy, which is also distilled in the Black Forest, the Kirschwasser. So yeah, I mean, the brewery is, I think, yes, 1700s or 1800s. I'm not sure exactly. It's not like not from, you know, 1200. It is a state-owned brewery. It's one of the few. There's Weihenstephan is a state-owned brewery, and so is Rothaus. And I mean, it just means that they. I mean, if you ask them, it doesn't mean anything. But I think it does mean that they have a little bit less. It's a little bit less free market. It's a little bit more relaxed, and like you cannot negotiate with these guys. Like when you want to, you know, negotiate. I mean, we're moving a lot of Rothaus, and so we were trying to negotiate. It's like zero response. This is the keg price. This is it. If you don't like it, just get another Pilsner.
Yes, their commissar.
The price is pretty high, right?
It's pretty high. I mean, it's understanding because it comes over in the refrigerated containers. But you know, with any other like importer,
We're back in Germany. We're in the Schwarzwald. What's the name of the town that you grew up in? And the town that your wife grew up in.
I grew up in Pfaffenweiler, which is like a village in the foothills of the Black Forest. It's 2,000 inhabitants, and it's like it's in the middle of the, you know, wine.
How old were you
when
you learned how to read?
No, that just happened when I came here.
See? And what town is your wife from?
Well, Sulzburg, which is kind of, I mean, many people in Germany don't know these towns. They're really tiny. So they're 8 miles apart. We grew up. We never met each other until we actually moved to Brooklyn, and we even lived in the same neighborhood in Clinton Hill when we met. And so it was this kind of crazy coincidence. And sure enough, we would always go to the German restaurants in the city. We'd go to some Schneider, Lorelei. We would always say, "Well, you know, this is Bavarian. This is from Cologne. But like, where's the Black Forest? Like, why? Like, it's such a great cuisine. There's Black Forest cake. There's Rothaus." And there's other great things in this region, and so it wasn't represented at all in New York. So we figured, hey, let's make a restaurant about the Schwarzwald.
Are there some other breweries in that region? You know, tell us some of the breweries.
Yeah,
and
there's one other one which is called Waldhaus. So there's Rothaus, and then just the next village over there's Waldhaus. Have you guys heard of this?
I've never heard of this.
Is it good?
Yeah, Josh is going to bring that one over.
Well,
the Gold Star special.
Rothaus is not going to like that. I don't know if they're listening, but we are talking with Waldhaus about bringing it in. But it's going to be much harder. They're much smaller. Uh-huh. They're like privately owned. They're tiny. But they were over here, and we had a really good time, and they're just trying to get their act together. That will be great. They have an unfiltered Pilsner that is amazing.
I was just going to say, how do you spell that? I want to look it up when I get out of this.
Waldhaus, Waldhaus.
Okay, Waldhaus.
All right.
And so are there breweries in every town here? I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, the Black Forest, it's highlands, right? So there's great water. There's great water. And so that there's a bunch. I mean, it's not that every town. It's really the foothills are wine growing regions, and the highlands is beer making. There's one called Alpiersbach, which is a little further north. Rothaus. There's something called Riegeler, not Riegele, Riegeler.
R-I-E-G-E-L-E?
E-R.
How do you spell that, Kim?
Is it that?
Well, there's Regula from Augsburg. Which
I different think one, yeah.
You guys,
because Ed used to import that the Regula, right. But not the same one.
Add an R to it, Regula.
So Ed Raven from Raven Briarland, Brands.
Yeah, Ed Raven.
He's got something to do with your business.
Yeah, he owns Briarland. He was the main importer for Gaffel, not anymore, but he still imports
the Gaffel Kolsch. Yeah.
And he imports Jaeger Pilsner now into the States still. So he still has that, but Gaffel's no more. And he also has Greenpoint Beer now, which is opening up again, I think June or July of this year. So they moved locations from North 15th to the end of Manhattan Avenue, next to St. Vitus, if anybody likes to go to metal shows.
I was going to say, Greenpoint Beer Nell is not closed, despite what you might see when you walk by, because it looks like it is closed, but they're reopening.
That's good. I mean, that's you're a part of a special team then, you know.
Yeah.
But I know Ed Raven talk about German beers. I mean, that's how he was one of the first guys for when Brooklyn Brewery ran the Craft Brewers Guild back in early 90s. I don't know if anyone knew him. Ed Raven was one of the reps.
Yeah.
And that's how I met him. He was going around. They had everything from Chimay to some other German beers, Eyinger's, I think. And the funny things back then, Rogue, a few other beers. But that's great that you're a part of that team. And but more about this German beer stuff. So like in Germany, let's talk about, you guys obviously know about other German beers. Like to me, Bamberg is like the place that cool people, you know, get their German beers. And I remember you mentioned Zum Schneider. He used to have, he brought in his special exclusive beer was Andex, which is another town. Do you want to say anything about, who wants to say anything about Bamberg or Andex? Or
I have Andex here, actually. Andex,
I love Andex. Yeah, tell us about Andex.
I'll say at Gold Star, we have Andex Bergbach Hell, which is their Hellerbach on right now. And it's generally you don't see that. That's we get that very limited, but we can always get Volbier Hell, which is their Helles Lager. It's drinkable and easy. I oftentimes tap. I tap Rothaus for every two times I tap Rothaus, I tap Andex Volbier Hell once. So definitely frequently.
Kim, do you have any Bamberg beers or Andex?
Not at the. I mean, we have Schirlenkla, two of the cans right now, and then we have Firkin coming up soon for the Lent beer that just got released on cask. But I've been to Bamberg last year and it was amazing. I went to Speciale, Mars, Schirlenkla. I got a tour of Schirlenkla, which is pretty hard to get.
Did you go on your own or did you go with the Pink Boot Society?
No, I went by myself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you could just do it on your own.
No. Not that I have anything, but like I did go by myself with my boyfriend. Sorry, Brendan. But I did go and it was awesome. I can't wait to go back. But my dream country was going to Schirlenkla and I got a tour of it and got to see where everything was made, get some beer from like the tanks with Martin from Schirlenkla. He's one of the main importers. So.
Wow. So how much time did it take you to put together that trip? And tell us again the places that
the
you
trip?
Went.
Yeah. Well, it started out in Berlin because my boyfriend plays in a show, in a band, sorry, not a show. He played a show in Berlin. So we just based it off that. So we went to Berlin. We went to, his uncle lives in southern Germany. So we just, from there, we went to Rothaus, which is based off today's show. Amazing brewery. Huge. It's like an amazing amusement park. It's literally the best place ever. They have lodging. I'm going to stay there this year. I'll let everybody know how it is, but definitely do it once in a lifetime. And then after that, we went to Bamberg and then to France, to Paris, and then Amsterdam.
Wow. Yeah. So how come nobody told me about the Rothaus Lodge? Aaron, did you know about that?
I did. I've Google imaged it many times and seen the logo on the pillows, and I hear each room has a packed fraternity mini fridge of Rothaus pills. It seems like a dream if you're allowed to travel.
Tobias, you're not selling this enough on us because you want to make us. Listen, I want to go to your town, man.
I grew up 40 minutes drive from this brewery. I don't need to stay in the lodge. That's why I don't know about the lodge.
It's relatives like, there.
Yeah.
It's like it's a little day trip for us to go to the brewery. But
you know, your uncle is still working there.
Yes, that's right.
He called me today.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hi, Uncle.
Of course, Uncle.
I do know that if you scan the code on the back of the bottle, it sends you to a video
of like a drone flying through the Black Forest.
Josh was telling me this.
And anybody should you should really go and do it. It's inspiring.
Yeah, this is a great video. Actually, when we had the tapping event where the CEO of the brewery came and tapped the first keg, we also had a filmmaker. They brought a filmmaker. They brought a film about the Black Forest, and we had it on a big screen, and it was fantastic. And that little clip from that film is actually what you see when you scan a QR code. It's a little things like that. It's super nerdy, and I think it fits with kind of the nerdiness of Brooklyn. That's, I think, also one of the reasons of the success. It's just a, you know, meeting of the minds, the nerd minds.
Black Forest.
So, Tobias, they make a few other beers too, right? It's not just this one Pilsner?
They make very little beers, like most breweries. They just do like a couple of styles. They have a Weizen. They have a Märzen, which is absolutely amazing. I mean, we had three kegs, five 30-liter kegs last Oktoberfest, and they sold in within hours. And it's even more full-bodied than the Pils. I absolutely loved it, and so did our guests. And then they make a non-alcoholic beer, which is really great, which I would love to get. But they don't want to bring it in.
Are they only selling the Pils in the States now?
Yeah, just the Pils. Okay. But, you know, we had just had a meeting recently with the delegation, with the sales manager. And, I mean, they make a whiskey. They make a Roadhouse whiskey, which is amazing. And I want them to bring that in, too. So they're warming up
I'll
to
bring
it.
A bottle back.
Yeah, please.
And Kim, you got excited when you mentioned a non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah. I mean, at Browery, we get a lot of customers. I feel like in Greenpoint, just in the recent years, there's been more and more babies happening. Not that that's wrong. Sorry, gentlemen. I know. You have kids.
Well, we live on the baby side of Brooklyn.
You guys, well, now, I feel like Greenpoint's been the baby side of Brooklyn now. It's like everywhere.
There's five dads in this room right now.
Hey, I have a puppy. I'm a mom. Counts. But we do have a lot of like pregnant women come into the store, and I try to accommodate to them. Non-alcoholic, like people have like dry January, you know, so I always try to have like a lot of non-alcoholic, you know, choices. At the moment, we used to carry like a McKellar non-alcoholic that came in for a bit, but at the moment we just have the Einbecker, which is the only one that I like.
Yeah, that's the only one I ever liked too.
Yeah.
They just started canning that too.
They started canning it, yeah.
Which has been great.
Yeah. And it's been flying off the shelf. People like it better. I mean, everybody likes cans nowadays. I feel like they just like see it and they're like,
The Germans are the only ones who can do non-alcoholic.
Yes.
I agree.
I generously took my pregnant wife to Munich for a vacation. And
what level constitutes non-alcoholic? Because, you know, certain bitters and things have like a little hint of alcohol.
Yeah, like kombucha, I see, like now has like 4%, 0.4%.
I think if it's under it's like one. Under I think one. If it's under 1%, it's non-alcoholic. Bitters, of course, can be sold in the supermarket to children.
Underberg can now be sold anywhere too, which we sell Underberg at our store.
Don't talk about that. All right, Josh, I want you to ask Tobias a question because this whole culture—you've got these crazy—you make candles with the Roadhouse Pils.
Is it true Josh is number two biggest seller in America? To him, you're never gonna take it. You're never gonna take him down.
I was trying to be the number one seller of Roadhouse for a while because I thought that if I was the number one seller, I could demand party kegs. You know, those little kegs you put in your fridge and you put them and you can like they have the little spouts like they have it for Heineken and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think that they would be just amazing to have on like as an option for people. And we never got. I've even talked to the importers and they were like, Roadhouse is never going to do it. But I do have a question for you. Can you say the full name of Roadhouse Pils in correct pronunciation for us?
You mean the Tannenzäpfle?
Yeah, that one.
Roadhouse Pils, Tannenzäpfle. So Roadhouse is obviously Pils, you know what Pils is. Tannenzäpfle, you guys know what Tannenzäpfle means?
I think.
It means little fir cone. You see one of those guys? I mean, that's the, you know, the firs from the Black Forest, so you see them everywhere. And it means just little fir cone. It actually is... This is just a regular Pilsner.
Like a pine tree.
All the Tannenzäpfle is the small size of the beer. They make a half-liter bottle that doesn't exist in the U.S., but that's their Pils. And this is the exact same beer, except it's a small bottle. And that's why they call it the little fir cone. Oh. It's a small bottle.
That was hurting my research.
Another little piece of nerdiness is that these fir cones, they're actually growing... they're actually growing like this. They're growing up. Mm-hmm. But on the label, they're facing down. So when you drink it like this, it actually is in the correct orientation. So
Kim, you're going to hashtag that, right?
I was looking up at the party kegs. I was looking at the party kegs. I have photos from last year about the party kegs to show Josh. Because I went over there and I bought a party keg for me and my boyfriend. No, I don't know why I bought one. I think I just bought it just
I mean, the party keg, like a 5-liter
Yeah, and keg. We just drove around all of Europe with it. And then we got to Amsterdam and we're like, wait, what are we going to do with this 5-liter Rothaus party keg when we have a day here? And
what a dream.
Tried drinking half of it. And then
sounds like the Brew Dogs episode, driving around with a keg. So, Josh, that's what you wanted, was a little 5-liter party keg?
I still want it. I'm not. No, it's the feeling of me wanting it has not left. Yeah.
That's Brooklyn table service. Right. Bottle service.
Totally. Just, yeah. Get a.
Yeah. I'm going to write an email in German to the brewery and see what we can do.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Another short break's coming up. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Andrew Friedman, and I'm the host of Andrew Talks to Chefs here on HRN. Every week, I interview a diverse cross-section of the best and biggest names in professional cooking. Give a listen and get to know all about the inner lives of chefs. You can find Andrew Talks to Chefs wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. It's our 10th anniversary. Lots going on, heritageradionetwork.org. So we got a special show. We're talking about Rothaus Pils in the house. Aaron Goldfarb wrote a great article, The Cult of Rothaus Pils, for a punch drink.
So .com.
You got a question for us, right?
Well, Jimmy, have you ever devoted any show to a single beer before besides
we
Rothaus?
We did an Orval show once.
Ooh.
Of course.
Coming soon. Thanks for the invite.
That's a good one. So I understand that it's not just Brooklyn. It's the quote-unquote Brooklyn of every place likes Rothaus, which the Brooklyn of Germany would be Berlin. And I understand Rothaus is also hot there.
Yeah, it's been a while since I last been to Berlin, but my friends tell me that it is the it is the hipster beer in the clubs in Berlin, and that's I think it's the exact same phenomenon than it is here. It's just a cool product that doesn't try to be cool at all. It's just cool because it is. It's not trying too hard.
And then here in the States, Josh, you brought in more Suarez Family Brewing Pilsner. What's the next beer that we're tasting?
This is Suarez Family Homespun. Yeah. I was trying to think of beers that were going to go well with Rothaus, and I thought of Suarez would be perfect. Yeah.
And what's Homespun? Is it also a Pils?
Pale Ale with Spelt. Easy and drinkable. I think it's 4.8%. It's just lovely. Yeah.
No, it's good. I mean, you're inspired. I'm really glad you're on the show because, we always have the Good Beer Seal Awards for a lot of independent, locally owned bars. Browery Lane's had it for fears. And, you're a breath of fresh air, Josh, because you've got the kind of place that I want to go to.
Thank you
it's
very much,
It's locally owned, and you really curate the beers, but also the experience.
Thank you so much.
Anything else you want to say about the program that you do with your beer?
Sure. I mean, we have 16 rotating taps, and they switch really quick. We try to go, the goal would be to, if you came in on a Monday this week, if you came in the next Monday, it would be all the way different. We do things to go, too. We have drafts to go. We have bottles and cans to go as well. But really, it feels more like a bar when you walk into it. So.
But you only put the Suarez and Crawlers because you were bringing it to the show.
Suarez does not want it. Yeah, so I did this as a liberty of coming on the show today. We generally don't have Suarez available in Crowlers, and that's just because they prefer that we don't, but it came directly from the bar to here right now, so definitely.
I think like Rothaus, they demand freshness and knowing other beers handled, so
Definitely. I think Suarez, I know those guys a little bit, and I think that they would be okay with us bringing it on the show.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And Kim, what about your... So you're really like an amazing, you know, beer bar person, tourist, Beer Street, and then now Briary Lane. Just tell us a little bit about the philosophy of what Briary Lane is, types of beers you guys handle.
It's had three managers so far, so I feel like every manager from the beginning... We'll be 10 years this year. So in 2009, when it first opened, Eric, you know, starting out then, it was like a lot of like small, like Victory was a big hit, like brewery, Rogue. I mean, we used to carry Hill Farms at all the time. Like, I mean, Eric, at least, not me. But it was, for me, I feel like the beginning, 2009, going to the Briary Lane was like a pinnacle point for me to craft beer. So to be there doing the beer buying now, it's pretty crazy. Because I always wanted
Greenpoint's really taken off.
And yeah,
a lot.
For sure. I mean, there's the Diamond Bar, like, which is not that far, then Tourist, and there's so many good restaurants too that are opening up. It's just so many things going. Poly G's, the Brooklyn Expo, the opening bash is like a block away from Browery, so Threes around the corner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been, you know, popping, as they say.
And Justin, you know, you're a beer writer too. I mean, you've got some cool things that you get to cover. What's your take on the Rothouse pills?
I don't know. I was saying earlier that, you know, before we started recording, that I don't remember the first time I saw it. But you know, it really is a striking label. It's so uncool that it's cool, you know. And I think Tobias was saying this earlier, that it's not trying to be anything that it's not. It seems completely authentic and just you know, kind of awesome and almost dated in a really interesting way.
Yeah, I think it's the same label since 1975.
Yeah, it looks like it is. But it's, you know, it's anytime you see it, you're not going to forget it. And Josh kind of talked about this earlier, that, you know, it's something that you don't really, I don't know. I travel quite a bit for beer, and I don't see this beer outside of New York City very often, if ever. So it seems like it's something that is our own little thing, and I think it's awesome.
Kim?
I was going to say, he said that it's still, like, you only see it in East Coast, or, you know, Mike Amity is actually trying to get into Las Vegas, so.
So BBD is in Las Vegas.
They're trying to get it, so if any Rothouse people are listening,
who knows, right?
They want to get into Las Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably researched where it is outside of Brooklyn more than anyone. It's really hardly even in Manhattan.
Yeah.
It's at, like, the Ginger Man and maybe a few other places. It's at Monk's in Philadelphia on occasion.
Oh, Proletariat.
No, you know why? Because they refuse to cross the river into Manhattan.
I know.
It might spoil the beer.
Well, it's like Suarez, too.
And
they don't like going to the...
As far as I know, it's in only one bar in L.A. Because of our friend Luke Smucker. And I can't remember that bar's name, but it's there.
Well, I want to ask Tobias a couple more questions. So, you know, it's very interesting. Again, it's the cult of this beer. But to many of us, you know, other than if you took German in high school and you know what Schwarzwälder Kirschtort is, we don't really know anything about the Black Forest region.
Yeah, that's what we realized when we, I mean, you know, I've been here for almost 20 years, and whenever I say where I'm from, yeah, I don't even say the town because no one knows the town, but I say, well, I'm from the Black Forest region, and they're like, oh, okay. And then they're like, oh,
this is New Jersey, right?
And then they're like, and then you see that actually they don't know. And I realized, okay, so I have to explain. And it's such a beautiful, it's not, you know, it's not Bavaria. Everyone knows Bavaria. Everyone knows Lederhosen. Everyone knows Oktoberfest. Everyone knows the Bavarian beers. And I was kind of upset that no one knows about the Black Forest. And I think the amazing beers, the amazing food, you know, it's super close to France. So we have a huge kind of Alsatian influence in the food. And it's really, that's why we started the restaurant. We wanted to bring that part of Germany to
Brooklyn.
What
are some of the dishes that you guys serve?
Well, we have, you know, we have Flammkuchen, which is a tart flambé. It's from Alsace. It's like a flatbread. It's really delicious. We have Jägerschnitzels. We have...
is that a hunter cutlet?
It's a hunter cutlet. It's a veal schnitzel. It's really great with the mushroom gravy.
Food's amazing.
It's good stuff. And we also have like super unknown stuff that is just from our... It's like beer battered mushrooms, which is the dish that you eat on the wine festivals in the foothills of the Black Forest during harvest seasons. And people say, that's not German. It's like, yes, it is. It's just, you just don't know it. It's just not, it's just not dumplings and like Bavarian fare. So that was really what we did. And Rothaus just fits so perfectly.
Let's talk about Oktoberfest. For me, Oktoberfest is kind of a non-happening in New York. But places like some Schneider, you know, with a real German, you know, customer base, go crazy for it. Do Americans appreciate Oktoberfest? You know, and why should we? Because there's so many other things to do in the fall.
Well, I was for the first time in Munich for Oktoberfest this past year, and I even grew up in Munich, and so it was pretty intense. It is quite something. I mean, it's just such a massive. I mean, if you just look at the logistics of the massive amounts of beer that are being consumed, it's just mind-boggling. And you know, for us, it's really always a good time. But when you grow up in Germany, Oktoberfest is something super kind of old-fashioned and like stuffy. It's not what the cool kids in the Black Forest want to like do. And so when we started the German restaurant in Brooklyn, we you know, obviously we had to do Oktoberfest. But we didn't want to be this. We didn't want to have an Oompa band, like a traditional brass band. So we started our own little Oktoberfest, and we asked Slavic Soul Party. Do you guys know Slavic Soul Party?
Yeah.
It's like a super amazing brass band from Brooklyn that our manager back then, he just dug them up, and they've been coming every year since, and we do this super non-traditional Oktoberfest party. And it's not German music, but it's brass music, and we got our food, we got our beers, and it's always a good party. So we like, you know, when you grow up, like I grew up in the 80s in Germany, I skateboarded, you know, I was looking at, you know, all the American music. And so it's not like we're like wearing lederhosen back at home. So, you know, and then coming here, you're being confronted with, you know, the image of Germany that Americans have. And it's just a little different. So I think that's kind of an interesting experience for me. And we're trying to just make maybe a little bit more modern version of a German restaurant than what you would.
You're the ambassador, man. You got to teach me.
I'll try.
So, and Josh, what about you? Does Oktoberfest mean anything to you? I mean, do you carry any of those seasonal beers? Do people actually buy them?
At Gold Star, there's a couple classics that come through the doors. And I think that we kind of tend to, when October or September comes around, I should say, we start having, I usually dedicate like 2 to 3 lines at a time to German beers for a couple weeks. We don't have a big party or anything, but I always like make a point to like present those beers.
Sure. One trend that I liked over the years, some small importers bring in these little gravity-filled Franconia casks. I don't know if you got those, Josh.
Yeah, haven't, but I know you have, Kim, right?
Yeah, we have a
Sorry. We know it's Sheldon Brothers.
Yeah, Sheldon usually brings them in, and
Vizanoa and a few others.
Yeah, there's like 5 different ones they usually bring over. And sometimes there's more than others, though. But, yeah, we usually have an Oktoberfest that's been going on since the beginning of the store has been open. So I've been trying to keep the tradition going.
You tap the gravity casks.
Yeah, gravity. There's a wooden gravity keg. There's the little small firkins. And there's, you know, like, I think I put, like, 10 different kind of German beers. Also German-American, too. Just try to mix it up a bit.
Yeah, because when I think of beer that way, like these fresh-filled gravity casks, then it means something. It's like the fall. There's some significance to it. Justin, were you going to say something about?
I was just going to say one of my favorite Oktoberfests in Brooklyn is at Spiendeivel, and they have a lot of those beers in the backyard, and it's just like a really cool event. That's, you know, it's a little obscure and geeky, but it's my.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be. I used to look for fresh hot beers as well. So it's more of a seasonal celebration. Doesn't have to be Oktoberfest style beers. Aaron, have you done a story about gravity casks or?
I have not.
Why there's no Oktoberfest in Brooklyn? Except that.
No, I mean, you know, as a good progressive Brooklynite, you're always concerned that Oktoberfest is becoming a little like Cinco de Mayo or St. Patrick's Day and you're being offensive. But I agree with Justin. The Spiendeivel one is delicious, and there's no one dancing around trying to embarrass German culture, so it's a good one.
That's good. I don't know. Let's wrap the show up, but there's got to be one more question.
I got one more comment that Kim said earlier, and she referred to a certain beer as an Italian-style pilsner, and I just love the fact that there are now Italian-style pilsners, and there's a brewery out in Oregon
Tipo Pils, right?
Called Tipo Pils, and that's kind of...
But there's a brewery out in Oregon, Portland, called Wayfinder, and they make an Italian-style Pilsner. And I just love that. So, yeah, I wanted to comment on that.
Josh?
About the Italian-style Pilsner?
You got something to say, because we...
I also love the Lupulo as well. Yeah. I mean, Oxbow is that when they came out with Lupulo, I was like, finally we can have this kind of like hoppy expression of.
So Oxbow kind of took the Tipo pills and made a main version.
Yeah. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. I also brought a bottle of their Punch Brook, which is Tim and his wife's wedding beer, which is a raspberry lager.
Let's pop that.
Sure.
So Oxbow Punch. So and
it's not cool.
Tell us your connection with Oxbow, because I love those guys. We love them from Maine.
You
mentioned them a
couple
times.
Good friends. Yeah. I mean, they're just rad people, and I love what I have water. Sorry. I just love what they're doing. You know, they're not doing what many breweries are doing nowadays. You know, they're going like the same thing with Suarez. Is they're keeping traditional, like they're doing pilsners, crispy little beers, and then Oxbow's just doing their own style too, like farmhouses, sours, doing a lot of beers that's like self-sustainable. You know, they make everything in Newcastle, which is using their own well water and their own, like for example, the Catalyst is their own honey beer, so they use their own bees. They're friends of mine. They make good beer, and I love them. And Maine's awesome. So.
And as like a real dedicated kind of beer bar manager, do you travel a lot? I mean, you went to Germany.
Yeah, I do travel.
Have you been up to Maine a lot?
I do go. I'm actually going next weekend to Maine for Orvalde. I'm having my own Orvalde at the store, but I'm going to be going up there just because I missed it last year and I wanted to go.
Where are you going in Maine?
To Novarives, to my friend Shaheen's bar. Yeah, so I'm just going to go spend it with the guys up there, and I usually hang out with the Oxbow crew. But yes, I do travel a lot. I used to live in Denmark too. After I left Torst, I lived in Denmark for 4 months, and I worked at a bar over there. So,
which bar did you work at?
Fermentoren, in Vesterbro, not a McKellar bar. Not that they're bar the bad, but
I thought you worked at Fishkin.
What's that? What's that?
Yeah. Aaron, what are you talking about?
Fermentoren.
We'll edit that out in post.
I'm like, what's Fishkin though? But I worked at Fermentoren. I also I've used to help out Omnipol a lot. They're good friends of mine too. So when they first did the first McKellar Beer Festival, I was one of their helpers at the festival, and they're also been around for a while. So
great. Yeah. This has been a great show, everybody. Tobias, tell us your name one more time. I always get the pronunciations wrong.
Tobias.
And your full name?
Like two beers.
Two beers and what? Beers. What's your last name?
Holler, H-O-L-L-E-R.
And you're Black Forest?
Black Forest, Brooklyn. We have two locations.
You happy with the show?
Yeah, it's so much fun. It's already over. I want to talk more about Roadhouse.
Tell us one last thing about Roadhouse.
Well, I think what I want to tell you is like, so 2014, we're getting ready for this big keg tapping of the first. It was also a gravity keg, first keg ever tapped by, you know, the boss of the brewery who comes. So we advertise it big time on social media, and then so it's a Friday night, and it's supposed to start at 8. At 5 o'clock, this guy shows up with big eyes, with a washed out like Roadhouse T-shirt from the 80s, American guy, and he's like, you know, I heard you guys are pouring Roadhouse tonight, and he's like, yeah, where you come from? He's like, yeah, I just drove 6 hours from Pennsylvania, and I'm ready. You know, I was at the brewery like in the 80s, and I'm so glad it's finally coming to the United States. And he was sitting first row, he got the first taste. I think his name is Michael. Maybe he's listening, because he's been following us on social media. So shout out to like the diehard Roadhouse fans in the U.S.
That's great, man. All right, so let's go around the room. Everyone say their name one more time, and we're going to wrap this up.
I'm Joshua Van Horn from Gold Star Beer Counter in Prospect Heights.
Kim Mercado from Briar Lane in Greenpoint.
Justin Kennedy from Beer Sessions. And that's still right. This beer. Let me shout out my other podcast.
Tobias Haller from Black Forest Brooklyn Restaurant.
Aaron Goldfarb, author of Hacking Whiskey, and
thank God you finally have a book, Aaron. All right,
thank you. I have 8 books, Jimmy.
Big shout out to everybody. Producer Justin Kennedy, thanks for getting the show together, Justin. Engineer Matt Patterson, our intern and assistant producer Dylan Hoyer, and I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host. Thanks for joining us here on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, woo.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you.
for our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.